Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 35, recorded Wednesday, March 22nd, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Three topics on today's No, I Haven't Quit Podcasting edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: the return of the shoe carnival, what I miss about travel, and milking the status seekers. This week, coming to you today from the quite nice Laguna Hills Marriott in Dana Point, California, in a rather nice room overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Okay, how many apologies are due for the long delay between podcasts? I think at least one for every listener, at least one for every listener who's hung around waiting for this episode. You know, I don't know what I can say except that, well, life got in the way of my podcasting. We moved the week after my last podcast, and though the new house was only three blocks to the west, it consumed way more time, as in every waking moment and then some, than I had anticipated. I scheduled myself off the road that week, but it's still, you know, I was probably just a bit unrealistic thinking that I could move and do a podcast in the same weekend. The week after that was just as consuming, but on the business side, projects, proposals, and any spare time was spent getting the new house in order. Important stuff, you know, like getting the high-def DirecTV service put in before the NCAA tournament for me, and the Sopranos premiere for my wife. You know, getting the DSL set up so I didn't have to leech off the wireless off the neighbors. I got back on the road last week, a triangulation down the California coast, a packed, completely packed United flight on Wednesday night to San Francisco, then a quick shuttle over to the SFO Marriott for a night's sleep, a meeting in Foster City Thursday morning, an afternoon flight down to Orange County, John Wayne Santa Ana Airport, which was delayed because of fog at SFO, a meeting Friday morning, a quick lunch at Wahoo's Fish Tacos, perfect for Lent, and then back to Chicago Friday afternoon. This week's travel a little different, only one destination, back down to Orange County, but less dwell time, flying out Tuesday night, returning Wednesday night, not much time to enjoy the view out of my hotel room, but it'll have me home to continue with the unpacking. In spite of all the stuff we threw out, there's still a lot of boxes. Following up, last week when I stayed at the SFO Marriott, I slept in one of Marriott's new Revive beds, only, I don't know, what is it, 5 years after Westin has had everyone clamoring for the Heavenly bed, which, by the way, it is. Marriott is now rolling out the response, slowly it seems. It's not a bad bed, you know, it's a nice fluffy duvet, but no top sheet, or at least, I don't know, maybe I ended up sleeping on top of it, but I couldn't find it. So, you know, you're sleeping a little bit Euro, you got that duvet sitting on top of you, which is nice, but you know, as I lay there at 4 a.m. awake, 6 a.m. Chicago time, the thought popped into my head, you know, how often do they wash this duvet? I mean, they didn't wash the old bedspreads between every guest, but now that this duvet is sort of directly against my skin, and there's a lot of traffic going through these airport hotels, I'm hoping they wash this thing. Leo Vigoda sent me a final dispatch from his trip between Amsterdam and Australia. The subject line of his note read, "Qantas are great." I didn't know Qantas was plural, but Frankfurt is terrible. Leo thought his flights in Qantas between Perth and Brisbane and then back home by way of Singapore and Frankfurt were excellent. However, Frankfurt Airport was another matter. Frankfurt is a horrible, nasty airport, Leo says. At first, I thought the signage was just bad until I realized that the reason there was no signs to the transfer desk was that there is no transfer desk. Asking staff wasn't much help as they were all quite dour and unwelcoming. When asked where to go, they gave me the wrong information and then sniggered when I came back because the directions they gave were wrong. This meant I ended up going through security twice and standing in a long line to check in for the final leg on KLM of my journey. This followed 22 hours of flying and 5 hours hanging around in airports, so I was not impressed. I was also surprised by the filth in the men's restroom at Frankfurt Airport. At 5:30 a.m., it looked and smelled like they hadn't cleaned since 5:30 p.m. the day before. Needless to say, I'll be doing my best to avoid transfers to Frankfurt in the future. I guess no Lufthansa flights for Leo in the future. This is one of the traveler's worst nightmares, getting jacked around when you're at your weakest in a foreign airport after a very long flight. Avoiding that sort of rigmarole is actually one of the reasons I like connecting through Heathrow on my flights to Europe. I mean, it's familiar. Everybody speaks English, and I can get a good cup of tea. It's been a few years since I've flown through Frankfurt. I did not have as bad of an experience as Leo, but then again, I was only connecting after a 45-minute flight from Dresden. The food was okay, and the porn shop in the basement, Herr Dr. Mueller's, was entertaining, to say the least. And the beer was pretty good, even at 11 in the morning, though I can't say that I remember the bathrooms. There's the glory of international travel for you. It all comes down to the bathrooms. Just goes to show you that Maslow was right. You have to take care of those base needs before you can have any hope of self-actualization. Thanks to everyone who sends along their thoughts and stories. The email address is, as always, comments@travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the return of the shoe carnival. You know, the TSA has been a topic of many Travel Commons podcasts, which, you know, sort of makes sense because the TSA has a huge impact on the frequent traveler's life. The TSA can make our lives easy or make it miserable. Now, when it was first formed, the TSA was supposed to make our lives safer. In the aftermath of September 11th, the TSA was created to do a better job than the private security companies of securing our airports. And I can't say if they have. I'm not sure anyone can. All the facts aren't available, understandably so, to the public, that would allow lay people such as me to do that analysis. However, we can say that the experience of travel by plane, which is the method of choice, or really the method of necessity, for most frequent travelers, is much less enjoyable than before, and the TSA hasn't done much to help. In Travel Commons number 31, we talked about TSA rage, those instances when even TSA officials admit that overzealous staffers, in their words, cause problems. In my experience, though, TSA rage is a rare event. Most TSA staff are just trying to do a decent job. No, the degradation of the travel experience comes not from a couple of instances of TSA rage, but instead by the small conveniences that just pile up. The lines, the attitudes, and of course, the shoe carnival. You know, if there's one thing about the TSA that just grinds on frequent travelers, it's the constant demand to walk through the airport in your stocking feet, or worse, if you're wearing sandals. It's now 5 years ago that Richard Reed bungled an attempt to blow his feet off on a flight from Paris to the U.S., causing millions of people in the U.S. to suffer from the TSA's foot fetish. No one else has been found with a shoe bomb, and no other country that I've flown through makes you take off your shoes. But yet the TSA continues to harp on the one thing that survey after survey of travelers says is the one thing they hate about the flying experience today. And it's gotten worse over the past 6 months. Last summer, I thought I felt the TSA's foot fetish wane. Fewer and fewer screening stations were demanding, shouting that everyone take their shoes off. Denver and Phoenix were especially recalcitrant, but most everybody else was reasonable. Thin-soled shoes with a heel of less than an inch that didn't alarm were usually just sort of waved through. My conversations with TSA supervisors at that time suggested that the shoe carnival was on the wane. TSA managers were getting the message. However, the TSA seems to have reverted to their old ways since the beginning of the year. It's rare now that I can walk through a metal detector without the screener putting up his hand and telling me to take off my shoes, even though they don't alarm and even though they were perfectly acceptable a few months ago. Now, here's an interesting twist, though. Some airports aren't doing full secondary searches if you don't take off your shoes. My recent experiences at Chicago O'Hare and Houston Bush Airport have been that instead of getting the full sort of spread eagle wand down, if your shoes don't alarm, the secondary search is just a quick swipe of the shoes with a cloth and then into the spectrometer to check for explosives. So if you haven't been walking through a fertilizer plant, the TSA screener just sort of waves you through. Traveling through Bush Airport recently with some colleagues, I was finished with my secondary screening before they had finished retying their shoes. They laughed when I had volunteered for the secondary, but, you know, thought better of it when I was walking away with my luggage while they were still struggling back into their wingtips. Mind you, this isn't a perfect strategy. While I rarely have had to wait for the secondary anywhere, my experience in Tampa recently was a bad one. The TSA was short-staffed, so I had to wait for the secondary guy to run over from another lane, and then no swabbing. It was a full wand down. And then someone had turned up the sensitivity knob on the wand, so everything beeped, even my bones. The guy went over my wrist bone a half a dozen times and then asked me if I had a pin in my wrist. Nope, I said. And you know what? You're the only one who's buzzed my wrist bone ever. And then he ended up going back over it another half dozen times before he scratched his head and moved on. No fast path here. I wish I knew what was going on with the TSA. Why the change back to the bad old days of the shoe carnival? Why, after 5 years, the TSA hasn't gotten any more efficient and still seems to gather some sort of satisfaction with the traveler's inconvenience? Maybe we ought to be able to see some of these facts and draw our own conclusions. Or at least make the TSA guys walk on the same dirty airport floors in their stocking feet. When you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Follow. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, what I miss about travel. I had two conversations with staff at my firm yesterday. They're about 2 hours apart, but exactly the same topic. Guys telling me that they're leaving consulting for lifestyle reasons. They love the people, the work, the challenge, but they hate the travel. I can understand that. These are not uncommon discussions. And for two career families with young kids, for example, this is a very hard lifestyle to maintain. My travel has been very light for the past 4 to 6 weeks. Marriott and American Airlines are probably putting out missing persons bulletins for me. And while spending consecutive nights in my own bed was a great thing, it also reminded me what I like about travel and why I've never wanted a job with no travel. Coming here to the Laguna Cliffs Resort last night, I had both the bad and good travel experiences. One of the bad experiences, I touched on the previous topic, my dealings with the TSA, but other than that, it wasn't bad. I didn't have to search for parking at O'Hare, the airport wasn't crowded, I scored an upgrade to first class for the 4-hour flight, and it got in on time. The weakest link in the travel experience, the airport, was a fairly benign experience last night. The good part of travel came after I arrived at Orange County, picked up my car, yet another Hyundai Sonata. Not a bad car, but I've had the same car my last 3 visits to Orange County. You know, but that's a whole nother story. So I picked up the car and headed south toward Dana Point. The in-car navigation sent me down the 73 toll road through the coastal range. Running through the hills, I came over a crest and looked down over the lights of Laguna Niguel, San Juan Capistrano, and in the distance, Dana Point. The lights following the contours of the hills were just laid out before me as my Sonata sort of tipped over the crest and headed down toward the coast. It was a sight so different from what I see when I drive through the farmland to my other client in McHenry, Illinois. The good thing is not that one is better than the other, but that they're different. Running through the Laguna Hills gives me an appreciation for sort of the flat, unendless sky of the Illinois horizon, which in turn gives me an appreciation for the brown folds of the coastal range. And it's that exposure to different things, different sights, different foods, different people, that makes people who don't travel jealous, envious of those of us who do. See, we complain about the hassles, the time away from the family, the delayed flights, the TSA abuse. The job market has rebounded. If you don't like it, we can find other jobs, like the two guys I spoke to yesterday did. But most of us aren't. We're not looking for something else. You know, we're just trying to get away with paying less, having to deal with less of the bad while getting more of the good. And the last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, airlines coming up with yet another way to milk the cash cow of precious metal status. In Travel Commons number 26, we talked about the explosion of elites, about how airlines are diluting the value of their elite status by counting non-flight miles, such as those earned through purchases on affinity credit cards, toward elite levels. Chris Chufo sent me a pointer to a recent offer by United allowing people to buy into elite status by prepaying for mileage. I'd seen the same offer on the United website, something like, I don't know, $10,000 for Premier Exec, maybe $50,000 if I remember correctly for their top tier, 1K. Now, God only knows that the airlines, especially the legacy ones, even more especially the ones in or emerging from bankruptcy, need all the cash that they can get. But as opposed to credit card miles, I don't think that this scheme debases the value of elite status. You know, you get the status through flying, only the timing of the ticket payment changes, rather than getting the elite status at the end of 50,000 miles. You're getting it up at the front end. And if you do the calculation, if you're willing to put the money down, if you're willing to put 10 grand down, and given today's flight, the cost of most of today's flights, you know, you're probably going to end up getting pretty close to 50,000 miles. I don't know, maybe you'll get away with 40,000 for Premier Exec. So again, it's, you know, you're doing the flying, and if you're willing to make that commitment to a single airline, why not? And of course, you know, it's been an open secret among frequent travelers, consultants specifically, that most of the travel brands have some sort of time box challenges. Example, you know, sort of stay 20 nights at a Marriott in a month and get immediate premium status. You would always have to call about these challenges. Consultants would do it all the time once they started a project. Pick an airline and a hotel, then call up saying that you'll give them all your business for the X number of months that you're on this project if they give you the status that you'll earn at the end of the stay, if they'll give it to you right now. It worked even better if you already had status on a competing chain. At the start of one project, I called into Starwood saying, I'm a Marriott Platinum member, but I'll stay in the Phoenix Sheraton if you match my status. She asked me to fax a copy of my Marriott card to her, and a week later, I'd received my Starwood Platinum card. Now, rather than only giving it away to pushy consultants, I guess that some of these companies are publicizing these challenges as a way to get some cash. And I'll tell you, if it keeps them from squeezing these seats together another inch closer, I'm all for it. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 35. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. In spite of my tardiness, all the music on today's show is from the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network. Check out the show notes for the specific artist names, and we'll have links to their websites if those are available. But the website for the Pod Show Music Network is music.podshow.com. If you have a story, a thought, comment, gripe, a voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, TRAVELCOMMONS.com, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. And thanks always for all the feedback. For those of you who hung in and are still listening to this, again, thank you very much. And I hope not to have such a long span before the next Travel Commons podcast. Until then, though, take care and safe travels. When
born.